It's 7:34 a.m. in the morning. You are listening to Upfront on KPFA. I am Gina Madrid.
And I'm Antonia Yuhas. Next month, Governor Jerry Brown is hosting leaders of state, tribal, and local governments, businesses, and citizens from around the world at a global action summit that's being held in San Francisco. The goal is to inspire deeper commitments from each other and from national governments in support of the Paris Climate Agreement, the global accord struck in 2015 with the aim of averting catastrophic levels of climate change. But the Paris Agreement will only get us about halfway to that goal. There's a lot more effort that has to come to get us the rest of the way. Environmental, climate justice, public health, economic, indigenous workers, and other groups and communities are gathering at the same time for public forums, art-making marches, and protests, all designed to help us inspire the gathered leaders to take the boldest actions possible to get us the rest of the way. One of their main targets is for action right here in California, and a key ask was articulated in a letter written by six Nobel Peace Prize laureates declaring that California has a moral responsibility to act and that its leaders can no longer explore for and exploit new fossil fuels. It urged Governor Jerry Brown to be a leader by freezing new fossil fuel drilling and development in the state and transitioning California away from oil and gas production into an equitable, sustainable economy. The signatories to that letter, by the way, were Nobel Peace Prize laureates Myred McGuire from Northern Ireland, Rigoberto Menchú Tern from Guatemala, Jody Williams from the USA, Shirin Ebadi from Iran, Lemon Gwabai from Liberia, and Tawakkol Karman from Yemen. How does California reach that goal? What are the steps for transitioning California from being the sixth largest oil-producing state in the country into one that is a leader in how to keep its fossil fuels in the ground and transition to a just economy? To answer that question, to tell us the steps that are necessary and what the impact would be, we're joined today in studio by David Turnbull. He is Strategic Communications Director with Oil Change International. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us on the phone is Cassie Siegel. Not yet. All right. We will be joined in a bit by Cassie Siegel, Climate Law Institute Director and Senior Counsel with the Center for Biological Diversity. We're just getting her on the line right now. Okay, David, thank you for being with us here in studio.
Sure thing. It's great to be here.
So let's start with the why. The ask is for California to be a leader in keeping fossil fuels in the ground. Why is it important to keep fossil fuels in the ground?
Well, the long and short of it is when you're in a hole, we need to stop digging. And that's what we're seeing here in California. We're doing a lot of work in California to reduce the demand for fossil fuels and to reduce our emissions from power plants and other sources. But we're still digging our hole deeper by drilling for oil and gas in our state at really, really impressive levels. In Governor Brown's administration, we have found in a report we released a couple months ago that he has allowed 20,000 new permits for oil and gas drilling in the state of California under his administration. So while we have been doing a lot to address climate change in some ways, we're really making the problem worse by really adding to the amount of oil and gas being extracted in the state.
So I think that number probably comes as a surprise to a lot of listeners. 20,000 new permits for drilling.
That's
just
right.
Under Brown's current
administration. That's right. In the past 7 years or so, we're looking at 20,000 permits, and those are permits for new wells and also for re-injecting existing wells with steam and other ways of trying to get more oil out of those wells as well.
And so let's give listeners sort of a geography lesson in where oil is extracted in California.
Sure. So the biggest spot for oil extraction is in Kern County in the Central Valley. And there's also a lot of extraction as well in L.A. County. And what's really shocking about L.A. County in particular, but also in parts of Kern County as well, is how close these oil and gas wells are to communities, to homes, to schools, to hospitals. We're one of the few jurisdictions where oil production exists. exists where there isn't a buffer zone between oil and gas production and these sorts of sensitive places. So we see massive oil production in Kern County. If you go down there, there are spots that the wells stretch beyond the eye can see. But then you also have wells that are basically hidden in communities and neighborhoods in Los Angeles as well.
So we've got Kern County, which is a largely Hispanic community, a large farm working community, also the central area of where oil production takes place in California, also an agricultural center,
right,
in California. So there are also issues there of the use of water and wastewater as a result of that drilling.
Exactly. A lot of the drilling in California is really water intensive. They're using newer, more extreme extraction techniques that require, injecting water and other chemicals and sand into the ground to really try to force oil out of tough to reach wells. And this extraction techniques like fracking is incredibly dangerous. It leaves water that is so-called produced water that is dangerous and can't be re-entered into the water cycle. And given, all that we are seeing in California with the effects of climate change and our basically perpetual drought, the idea that we're using so much water to be essentially making the problem worse is really, counterproductive and just irrational.
Okay, so that's Kern County, which is where about 70% of oil production takes place in the state. Then you're saying there's also in the city of Los Angeles within communities production. The other location, of course, is offshore California, where we still produce oil.
And
we're now also joined by Cassie Siegel, who is Climate Law Institute Director and Senior Counsel with the Center for Biological Diversity. Thanks for joining us, Cassie.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you talk about what it means that these 20,000 permits that have been signed under Governor Brown for new oil and gas development, how does that translate into actual production? And where are most of these leases being signed, or permits being signed, excuse me?
Yeah, the 20,000 wells are all over the state. And the production from the new permits is actually incredibly significant. The easy oil is gone in California because we've had production for so long here. And so it's getting harder and harder and more energy intensive and more damaging to get the oil out, which is why there's this drilling frenzy here. And I think David actually probably has some numbers on production the amount of production that we would avoid if the governor stopped issuing new permits, and maybe the 20,000 too. Do you have that, David?
Certainly, if we were to stop new production, this is one of the key demands of a campaign that Cassie and I and others in California are working on. If the governor were to stop permitting new oil and gas production, in the next 12 years, we could avoid 560 million barrels of oil being produced. That's over the next 12 years. So at the current rates of production and permitting, that's what we project.
So I want to get to the what happens if we stop in a second, but first,
sure,
I want to stick for another minute with what happens with what we're currently doing, because I think what happens when we live, I live in San Francisco, we're in a studio here in Berkeley. Those of us who aren't near where the oil production takes place, I don't think of California as an oil-producing state. And as you say, we are one of the original oil-producing states. There's been production here for almost 150 years. We are still the sixth largest oil-producing state in the country. What we do see in the Bay Area, of course, are the downstream effects. We have a mass refinery segment here. A lot of that refining action is refining the oil into gasoline, some of which is used here, some of which is exported out of our state. But the actual production, I think, is often something to which many of us have blinders on, that it's taking place within the state. And Cassie, the point that you were starting to explain, I'm hoping you can say a little bit more about, which is the state of our wells right now, because they've been producing for so long, it's getting harder to get the oil out. And can you talk more about that? But then also the type of oil that we have, which I understand is heavier, is also heavier oil, right?
Yeah, exactly. So a couple of pieces to that. First, it's a little known fact that California is the top oil producer. Since 1900, only Texas has produced more oil than California. And we have dirty, heavy, climate-damaging oil here, and three-quarters of the oil California is producing is actually more climate-damaging than oil from the tar sands of Alberta, Canada. That is really surprising to people, but it's really, really important. You know, we know that we can't have the Keystone Pipeline and we can't keep burning tar sands oil, but, you know, surprisingly, we're not as aware that we can't keep burning dirty California heavy crude either. And then the health effects of the oil and gas production. The wells, you know, we have the nation's largest urban oil field in California, in Los Angeles. We have huge amounts of neighborhood drilling. You have oil and gas wells pumping literally right next to people's windows. And you have all kinds of nasty chemicals used in the process. And then the hydrocarbons themselves consist of a lot of chemicals that make people sick. And people are sick in the moment. Kids have nosebleeds, some nearly every day, that live near this stuff. They're dizzy, they're nauseous. One facility in Los Angeles, the community had filed over 200 complaints to local air district regulators over a long period of time. Nothing was done. And it wasn't until EPA inspectors came and they got nauseous and almost passed out inspecting the facility that something was done for that one. And then this chemical exposure, we know over the long term, causes all kinds of problems, cancer, higher rate of birth defects and low birth weight babies for women who live near these facilities. So we have the climate harms, and then we have this terrible, terrible suite of health harms, and all to produce oil that we cannot afford to burn. You know, now is the time when we have just got to speed the transition to what the science says we need. And if we can't do it in California, where in the world can we?
And also in Los Angeles, these are, of course, the production is still even taking place in disproportionately low-income communities of color and disproportionately impacting low-income communities of color. And as you're saying, the health impacts on women and children in particular are profound. That's also the same for the refineries. So you're saying we have this heavier oil. Most of California oil is refined in California, and heavier oil is more polluting in the refining process as well. So that means for refinery communities, again, disproportionately located in low-income communities of color in California, they're also receiving those more harmful impacts. So right now we've got a governor that is focused on the demand side, so reducing the demand for fossil fuels and addressing it from that side. What would it mean to start addressing it from the supply side, David? So the report lays out some pretty critical findings on how significant it would be if California started, and by the supply side, we mean reducing the supply of oil and gas as it comes out of the ground.
That's right. You know, we like to, or a few researchers have called it cutting with both sides of the scissors. So, you know, one side is reducing the demand for fossil fuels. And critically, scissors only work if you have two sides. The second side is reducing the supply, the production. So we put out a report called The Sky's Limit California a couple months ago that looked at what would happen if we were to if the governor were to stop issuing new permits for oil and gas drilling and also commit to a phase out of existing production within a half mile or 2,500 foot buffer zone away from schools, homes, and hospitals. And what we found was pretty amazing. If we were to implement those two plans here in California, if Governor Brown were to take those steps, we could put our oil and gas production on a path of managed decline that would align with what we need to achieve our climate goals. To put it into numbers, what we found is that the cumulative oil production avoided by halting those new well permits, as well as phasing out wells within those 2,500 feet of sensitive areas, could mean keeping 660 million barrels of oil between 2019 and 2030 underground. That's equivalent to 425 million metric tons of carbon pollution over the same period, which is, you know, that's a really substantial number and, you know, would really contribute to our efforts on climate change. And furthermore, what it would do would be to set a global precedent of leadership on this issue of taking on the fossil fuel industry, of taking on our addiction to digging oil out of the ground, and would really show what true climate leadership looks like. Governor Brown has this critical opportunity coming up ahead of the Global Climate Action Summit to show that we need to address the supply side of this problem, and our report shows that if he did, it would have a critical and important impact on our climate efforts.
One of the things the report also found, which I found pretty astounding, was just how small a contributor to GDP oil and gas production is in California. It's less than 1%. Is that right?
That's right. I think that's right. You know, it depends on precisely which county. Obviously, Kern County has a little bit higher of a percentage in terms of its contribution. But the point remains that California has been on, despite our historic oil production over the years, we have been on a slow decline of oil production here in the state. What we're suggesting is to nudge that decline a little bit more quickly so that we can actually plan for it, so that we can be sure that we're aligning our reduction in oil production aligned with our climate goals. And we can do so in a way that rather than being at the whims of oil prices and the profit motives of oil companies, we can plan for it. We can say we are going to do this, and this is how we're going to do it, so that we can protect the communities that are currently seeing, you know, the limited jobs from the oil sector, and ensure that they are getting the support they need to move to new jobs and to have that just transition that's so critical. So yes, you know, oil does contribute some small amount to GDP in California, but it's small and it's getting smaller. And our hope is that we can put out a plan that actually makes sure that we're protecting those communities as we move forward.
And one of the pieces that's important there that the report highlights is that if we look around the world, it's necessary globally. Most studies have found that at a minimum, 3/4 of existing fossil fuel supplies need to stay in the ground to just head off the most catastrophic of expected climate change. Many studies say all existing fossil fuels need to stay in the ground in order to hit that same goal. And then the question becomes, where do you start? Where
exactly
do you start keeping the oil in the ground? And what makes California unique is that not only are we a significant production state, but we're an incredibly wealthy state with a diverse economy. So it would be
exactly.
So can you talk more about that, sort of why California is in a unique position to be a leader in this process?
Yeah, you know, there's a sort of principle in international climate work that talks about the need for rich countries that have the most historic responsibility and also the most capability to take action on climate change to do so, and to recognize the different sorts of capabilities of different areas of the world to take action. Here in California, as you say, it's a sweet spot for climate action. We have a diverse economy. We have been producing oil for a long time. We have been a contributor to the problem, and we have the resources that are needed to actually tackle it. Furthermore, when you look at what sorts of oil we should be keeping in the ground, you know, we need to keep a lot of it in the ground. We should certainly start in places that are dangerous and dirty. California's oil is both. It's dirty, and it's also being drilled in communities and near homes and schools and hospitals and other places. So that's a clear first place to start, a place where there would be immediate health benefits, and our state can take on this challenge because of the resources that we have.
Cassie, can you talk about the steps that would actually be involved for you know, how do we turn off the spigot now that it's been on for so long? What are the steps to a managed decline? And whose job is it? If the governor decides tomorrow, no more oil production in the state of California, what are the steps that need to take place for that to be implemented?
Yeah, definitely. And we're asking Governor Brown to do these things precisely because it's his job and he has the power to do so. So to talk some specifics, each of the 20,000 wells issued since 2011 was within the discretion of state regulators who report directly to the governor and they're supposed to follow the law. So no oil operator has a right to receive a permit to drill a new oil well in California or any of these other permits that they need to keep going. So to frack, you need a permit, to inject steam, you need a permit, and so forth. And the governor's regulators, whenever they get a permit application, they're supposed to weigh the risks and damage from the proposed well under our flagship Environmental Protection and Community Right to Know Law, CEQA, and decide whether to issue the permit or not. In practice, this isn't what they're doing. They're just rubber stamping permits. But it's entirely within the governor's discretion and, in fact, his obligation to tell his regulators to stop issuing these permits and follow the law. Unfortunately, what he's done so far is the exact opposite. So in 2011, the state's two top regulators blew the whistle on unsafe and illegal oil industry activities. The oil industry complained it was slowing down their permitting, and the governor summarily fired them. So, we have the oil industry being super aggressive, saying they get to do whatever they want. We have the governor giving them what they want, but that is just the opposite of what he should be doing and the opposite of what the law requires.
And David checked that number for us to make sure we got it right on what percentage of the California GDP is contributed to by oil.
That's right. And it's less than 1%, as you said. It's 0.3% statewide. And we're talking about less than 1% of the private sector workers in the state as well, something more like 0.1%. So agriculture, arts and recreation, food services, transportation utilities, real estate, all of these other government, all of these other industries have far more of an impact on California's economy.
And I'll just add one piece to this, which is something that I looked into, which is the main argument that Governor Brown has put forward for not keeping fossil fuels in the ground is concerned that California's gasoline prices would increase. And I compared the trend of California oil production to the trend of California gasoline prices, and they have absolutely nothing in common whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So there is no correlation actually between the amount of oil that we produce in the state of California and the amount of money that we pay for gasoline to fill up tanks. And I'm not going to say our tanks because I don't own a car and I've never owned a car. So people who have to fill up their gas tanks, there's no correlation to how much oil is produced in the state. It's a global market. And so we can continue the trend that we have been on for some time, which is reducing production in the state of California and not expect to have to pay more for gasoline in our tanks as a result of that decision. One of the things that you also write about quite a bit, David, in the report, is what a just transition looks like. So how California can also implement this process in a way that doesn't leave workers and communities behind who are dependent on oil production. So as we start to wrap up the segment, can you talk about that?
Sure. So this idea of a just transition has been around for a long time, and it's a critical, important part of this whole discussion. Yes, it's a small percentage of California's GDP, but there are people that are working in this sector, and they need jobs. So what we've talked about is we need to find funding to support the Just Transition Program, which includes programs like job retraining, helping workers go back to school, tuition assistance, just community benefits and ways in which to support those workers and communities that have relied on the oil industry for their jobs. And one way that we could do that, which is not necessarily on the table at the moment, but could be, is to actually impose a tax on the oil production that we are going to be ramping down. It would be a transition fee or a transition tax that certainly we wouldn't want to rely on you know, into the future because we want oil production to go away. But if we were to put a modest tax on oil companies' extraction of oil in our state, we could be generating billions of dollars. We estimated somewhere between $3.5 and $6.9 billions of dollars in revenue between 2019 and 2030 to support these programs. So it's a critical part of the equation, and there are ways to fund it.
We only have a few seconds left. I know that lots of listeners want to get involved in the organizing that's taking place between now and including in September. How do they do that?
So the first place to go is brownslastchance.org. That's our campaign to pressure the governor to take these steps on oil production. And one other plug I'll make is September 8th, there's going to be the Rise for Climate, Jobs, and Justice March in San Francisco. We're expecting tens of thousands of people in the streets ahead of the Global Climate Action Summit. And that's ca.riseforclimate.org.
Great. Well, thank you. Our guest in studio has been David Turnbull. He is Strategic Communications Director with Oil Change International. Joining us by phone has been Cassie Siegel. She's Climate Law Institute Director and Senior Counsel with the Center for Biological Diversity. Thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Antonia.